AI is not going to put you out of a job. Someone using AI will. AI isn't running itself. You still, as an architect, have to put in Verus. You still have to have a model, for goodness sake, as a substrate. You know, like, it's not going to create it just out of nothing. And so you use your model, you know, as the substrate, and then it's a tool, just like Enscape's a tool, just like Revit's a tool, just anything else. It's a tool in your tool belt to help you do your job and do it faster.
Hi. Hello.
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 Hello and welcome to Architecting.
Okay.
Hi. Oh, hey.
Hey.
How's it going?
Good.
Good evening. Welcome to Architecting.
Yeah. Well, welcome back. Should I go on another rant about how it...
No. Just skip the rant.
Okay. How it's hard to get these out. It's summer. It's hard to... It feels like there should be more time to do things, but there's less.
Yep.
What have we been up to? We've been busy.
We wrapped up two high school architecture summer camps that we were lead instructors for.
Mm-hmm.
That took some time. Yeah. It's fun. It's fun and discouraging and optimistic all at the same time.
Architecture is so weird where we can study it and we can think so hard about it, but it can also be very simple.
Yeah.
We had 40 high schoolers from around the country come in for 1 week, and they designed a half mile tall vertical city.
Futuristic.
Made up out of how many different units? I mean, we made a kind of exoskeleton, and then they filled it in. And it's just amazing to see them think through everything. And
yeah, they did a great job.
A little too much passion sometimes. And it's interesting how fast you can design something, you know? Like, yeah. You can take forever. You can take years on a house, or you can design a whole city.
You're
not
week.
Really designing a whole city, but.
Yeah, that was for the ACE mentorship program camp. That was really awesome.
Yeah. Designing a whole city in a matter of seconds, that takes us nicely to this guest that we have here.
Good transition.
So today we have Bill Allen on the show. So it's kind of a slightly different type of guest. You know Bill, right?
I know Bill.
He's like a celebrity sort of.
He is.
So yeah, Bill's an interesting guy where he was working for an large architecture firm as their BIM manager, and he just seems like he just soaks up different technology and ways to do things, and then started his company, Evolve Lab. I ran across him. We hired him at one of the firms to kind of redo our Revit template, but he can do much more than that, and it's amazing the sort of like plugins and apps that their team over there at Verus has created. So go check those out. There's a lot of different time-saving things.
Did you mean to say team over at Evolve Lab?
What?
You said team at Verus.
Oh, yeah. Not Verus. Evolve Lab. That's what the company's called. Yeah, I mean, they have a bunch of different programs and plugins that they've created, and we get into a lot of those in the episode. But I think the most profound one, easily the most profound one they've created is called Verus. And so this is a AI generation tool. We, in the bonus part, he goes through a tutorial with me or shows me the program, and I'll be posting that so you can see that as well. But it just gets into a really interesting realm and how quickly AI has come into the design field.
Yeah, I recently asked Bill Allen to join a panel with the Gensler Southwest region just about AI. We had four panelists and it was a really fascinating conversation. And it seems like Evolve Lab is just kind of at the forefront of all these different tools, not just Verus, but they're really pushing things that are going to get more efficient and quicker and make room for other design opportunities.
Mm-hmm. I mean, what do you think about AI? Like, I had a hard time sort of formulating my opinion on it, or not my opinion, but voicing how I feel. I think I feel it scares me and it amazes me. It amazes me how quickly it can iterate. And so he shows me this Verus, I think it's version 1, And it's amazing, you know, it's a text-based generation tool you can use. But the thing that's different about this compared to like Midjourney or something like that is that you start with your own geometry. And so you're bringing in your Revit model as a base. And then it has different sliders for creativity sliders, stylistic sliders, whatever. And it's pumping out images and iterations of your model. I tried it out. I think I was trying to do something too specific with it. I already had kind of a house that I just wanted to kind of study minor changes to. And I was kind of disappointed with that because it was just doing these big changes to it. Now they've come out with version 2 geometry override slider on it. So it can keep your geometry and it has a lot smaller tweaks to it. But I think, you know, the fear comes in of, you know, trend or whatever of a kind of like Pinterestification of architecture, especially that you see sometimes in architecture school or in the profession where you're just taking these Pinterest boards that your client's giving you and you're copying, pasting and collaging something together and it's coming up with the latest trend and slapping it out. And I think that the fear for me is like these AI tools makes that even easier where you're just creating and you're generating geometry so quickly and it looks so good, but then what's behind it, the ideas and the meaning is not there.
With my experience, I'm not actually scared of it. Like I went through a phase where I was like, this is terrifying. And now I was sitting on a jury recently and they were using AI for this design studio. And I realized that like the critical eye, like the critical designer still has to be there. And you're going to get this flood of information, this flood of iterations. And it doesn't mean anything unless you can say, I went this way for this reason. Like just having endless precedents and then selecting one is not going to produce something that, you know, pushes the boundaries of architecture. I've seen some like really exciting ways of using it, like even just trying to create look feel images where you want this certain material in this green space and you spend like, you know, way too long searching the internet for that perfect image. And you can just type that into Midjourney and get this perfect, no copyright image right away. And then someone else on the panel was actually talking about using AI to generate entourage and the right people with the right emotions, the right diversity, and how impactful that can be for the storytelling aspect of it and not just the architecture. So I'm seeing all these different, like, really exciting ways to use it that aren't, you know, like they're tangential to the design process, because I still think you have to have that critical eye. And I'm like everything else, it's a tool. It's going to be a shift in the industry, but I'm not scared of it.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Bill says a good quote of that AI is not going to take your job. Someone using AI is going to take your job.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, you can't have fear just for fear's sake. I think we all need to, if you want to be within the critical discourse of the profession, you have to understand it and figure out, like you're saying, how you can use it in different ways. I think that there's like this inner child fear of mine that it replaces me of the iteration and idea generator that then the client can look at the 12 options and just pick themselves. Like, but like you're saying,
there still has to be purpose behind the iterations. There has to be a reason to distinguish the direction. And we're trained to think about so many different variables within the design field that AI cannot consider those things through the iteration.
Yet. I think that's the crazy thing. It's just how fast this has come about. And yeah. I mean, and it's bringing it back to Bill. I mean, it's just amazing how quickly they brought this out. And I made a sort of joke about him being a celebrity, but like, he's very much at the forefront of this, of integrating AI with architecture, especially, and very connected in with that, with the world and the kind of movers. What did you say? Like, somebody was really impressed that you had brought him in, and then they're flying him to California. And
yeah, colleagues in LA were really excited he was joining the panel, and I think he's going out to meet with them out there.
Yeah, but I think overall, just I've met with him multiple times when I've gone out on different iterations of my own firm, just to talk about business and to talk about life and advice and he's been a great friend through that, and it's impressive to see what he's built, and it's just the sky's the limit for him. So yeah, I enjoyed this conversation. Check it out.
But first, here's a few messages from our sponsors.
Hey, we're happy to be sponsored by Modern in Denver Magazine. For over a decade, they've been crafting fantastically curated content on Colorado designers and projects, spreading the gospel of good design within our region.
And I love how the goal of Modern in Denver aligns with the goal of this podcast, to better build up and connect the community of Colorado designers. So go buy a copy of the magazine at your local bookstand, subscribe to their weekly email list, and follow them on Instagram.
Check it out.
And now back to the show.
How's it going?
Really good, man. Really good. Thanks. How you been?
Good. I know. Long time no see.
Yeah, it has been a while.
It's like, what a bad friend. I didn't even know you moved out of the state. And
it's all right. I'll hold it against you for years and years to come. But
that's good. Yeah. Each time you see me in person, you can hold against me.
Just kidding.
yeah, that's funny.
That's right.
It's nice having you on. You're nice and prepared. You're like an interview master. You're getting interviewed all the time. You've got your nice microphone set up and.
Oh, everything. I don't know. I've been invited a few times on some podcasts. I always enjoy them. They're always cool. I enjoy the conversations, and it's cool to see like what others are doing in the industry and chatting shop and other things. So yeah, it's cool.
Yeah. I'm jealous of you. I mean, you know, you're like, your business is like set up to network and integrate with other people. And it's like, that's the stuff I like doing, but I just interview my competition, and you're interviewing possible clients. It's a smarter way, but.
It's cool. Like, I used to work at HDR architecture for 8 years. And when I worked there, you know, I knew how HDR did things, like how they put together drawings and, you know, their design technology stack and stuff. But I was in that HDR bubble, you know, and at that time it was like, man, I thought everybody was using BIM. Everyone's doing computational design. And then when I got outside of that bubble, I was like, holy smokes, it's a completely different, you know, world and environment. People have different gradations of like implementing a technology. And so what's cool about what I do now is being able to like talk to different people and learn how different people do things. So I feel like I have like a much broader like understanding, maybe not as deep into like one company, but like more of like a spectrum of like trying to understand how different people use tools and technologies and architecture. So,
yeah, it's a unique position, right? Where, like you're saying, you can get really myopic into one place that you're at and say, this is the way it is, or I assume every other firm's doing it so much better than us. Like, you don't really know.
Right.
And yeah, you guys get to pop in and say, no, you really can be doing this a lot better. Yeah.
Right.
Well, cool. Well, let's see. Let's start off with an awkward question. Who are you in like three sentences?
Three sentences. Oh, man. Say I'm a Christian, a husband, a father, in that order. Self-proclaimed nerd, design technologist. I speak at some conferences and talk at some meetups and stuff, whether people like really are interested or want to hear what I have to say or not. But I kind of nerd out about that stuff. So I like talking about stuff that I'm learning about and like kind of sharing that kind of information. So I'd say that's me. I own two businesses, two and a half, I guess. I own one business, Evolve Lab, and OnPoint Scans is another one. And then we own a little bit of a coffee shop, my wife and I do. So Scooter's Coffee Shop. I don't know if you've heard of them, but.
Yeah. How'd that all begin? Where'd you come from? Where'd you grow up?
Omaha, Nebraska. Oh. 29 years, born and raised. Moved out to Colorado, Boulder, Colorado, represent for 7 years. Was house poor for those 7 years because it's very expensive living in Boulder. And then recently moved back to Omaha 2 years ago. So that's the short of it.
Yep. And I just found out yesterday.
Yeah.
So what did you, Omaha? Yeah, I grew up in Kansas. It's like the sort of northern neighbor up there. And had a lot of Nebraska friends. And when I went to Kansas State, and we're always singing the Omaha praises, went up there for a fun wedding one time, maybe two times. But so what was growing up like for you? What were you around? What were you into?
In Omaha?
Yeah.
Dude, I was a skateboarder, so like I went to the skate parks quite a bit. I had a buddy that lived on a lake, so we'd go wakeboarding a lot. Mm. On the personal side, I played percussion and drums. So I was in a band. I was actually I was in percussion in high school, and they fitted me with this massive bass drum, and I was like the same like 78 pounds that I am right now. And so like I was out there like marching on the field trying to like carry this massive bass drum, you know, in marching band. So yeah, that was kind of growing up, I guess, for me in Nebraska.
What was technology like? I think we're about the same age, and it was an interesting thing of, I think I remember in elementary school, like the school getting computers and like seeing a first email, and then like remembering Facebook, like starting when I was in college. And, you know, like it's interesting where we're not on like the beginning of computers, right? But we're at a certain beginning of it. Was computer and technology always kind of intertwined with you growing up?
Yeah, good question. You know, like I remember actually even before Facebook, do you remember MySpace?
Yeah.
I don't know if you ever had
a
MySpace
account. No, I didn't.
No, okay.
My dial up in the country was difficult.
Yeah, so I had the MySpace before Facebook hit the scenes. Yeah, I remember I was trying to tell my kids about this the other day, like internet, like, dude, we didn't have Wi-Fi. You had to like dial into your phone, you know, like remember the router noise?
Yeah, yeah.
All that. But yeah, I took a computer-aided drafting class in high school, and that's kind of when I got, you know, the itch when I started learning about, I was doing an AutoCAD class, and I was like, oh man, I want to be an architect. Like I can go design houses and this seems awesome. And my dad was a commercial washer and dryer repairman. Mm. And I remember for a summer, like I worked with him hauling washers and dryers up and down like apartment stairs. And I'm like, oh man, this manual labor thing is not for me. I don't want to do this, you know, as an adult. And so I went to school for computer aided drafting design technology. That was kind of my runway into that things and design all things technology and design technology.
So what was that choice like? I mean, the University of Nebraska has an architecture program, right? In Lincoln. What was that decision like for you of, you know, I feel like that's a sort of similar story to a lot of the architects I interview of like getting into CAD in high school and being inspired by it. Did you think about different choices of kind of going to school for different things? Or was it just like, no, this drafting's awesome. That's what I want to do.
Yeah, it was that. It was like, I really wanted to do that. And actually I got a 2-year degree in computer aided draft. I actually didn't go to a proper university.
Mm.
And I chose that because I didn't want to do all the extra classes. I wanted to just get into like working right away. And that was like the fastest track that at the time I understood to do it.
Mm.
And it was really weird because I did that and then I started working at HDR and then I got invited by the University of Nebraska to teach classes there.
Mm.
And I was like, dude, I'm not even an alumni. And they're like, yeah, we don't care. Like we want you in here to teach a lot of this design technology stuff. And so I felt like super unqualified, you know, to teach on it, but I was speaking at some conferences and doing some cool things in Grasshopper and kind of some things in Revit. And so I got invited to do, you know, some classes there at the University of Nebraska.
When you went to the drafting degree, did you have a vision of what that job would look like 2 years later?
Yeah.
Were you thinking, yeah, I want to work in an architecture office or,
yeah,
because there's a lot of things you could probably do with that, right? I mean,
yeah. Yeah. I wanted to design houses. And I thought that was like the way, you know, to do that. Found out like shortly after, oh, you're more like a red line picker upper, you know, like you work for the architect there, you have a design architect, design principal, you know, they'll do the design. And then, you know, so that was kind of the big difference. I found out I did get an opportunity to do quite a bit of that while working at HDR, though I still had some design freedom, which was nice. I had a really good boss on the architecture side. Shout out to Chris Barnwell over there. And so he was kind of my mentor and helped me with on the design side of things. So
when did you graduate from there?
2004.
Oh, okay. And so you came to HDR here in Colorado or?
In Omaha. I worked in Omaha. Okay. Yeah, yeah, their corporate office for 8 years in Omaha.
I guess there is just so many firms in Omaha, right? Like it's crazy how many firms started in Omaha, all the kind of 3-letter firms and got massive. So yeah, then that was probably a good time to graduate. A lot of jobs. And so then how did you move past that sort of picking up Redline role and into the speaking at conference role?
Yeah, I was big into just like learning. You know, Grasshopper was just kind of getting popular. Actually, what happened is I went to a conference called Parametricism in I think 2011. Mm. And that one was like really instrumental to me, where I was like, oh my gosh, this is incredible. So I really started getting into computational design, and I was really obsessed with interoperability between, because I was like always the guy inheriting a SketchUp model and converting it to Revit. Mm. And so I was always obsessed with this idea of interoperability. So I was trying to do those things with Grasshopper, but then also just using Grasshopper as a design tool. And then so I just started speaking on those kinds of things, and then also got into Dynamo and started speaking on Dynamo. And I was using Dynamo for designing different things. I was in the healthcare studio at HDR. Mm-hmm. So we did like a lot of hospital projects. And so I'd use it for like vehicular canopies and things. And then, you know, I started attending some of the conferences, but really was just like talking on things that I was learning. You know, I was like, oh man, I found this cool way to design. Instead of like, the way I looked at it was, instead of modeling something once, I could model it parametrically, dynamically, right? So then I could set kind of the scaffolding for it, and then I could flex it, and I could create, you know, 21 options instead of one option, you know, in a day just by moving the sliders. And I was like, this is a way more efficient way to model. And so then I started taking that and then teaching that, you know, at the conferences. And that was kind of the springboard for me for speaking.
And so that, I mean, you were starting to play around with that in what, like 2006, 7, 8?
Yeah, probably around 2008, and really heavy in 2011. Hmm. Like, that's when I really started using, like, the tools started to maturing enough that you could like use them on projects, I felt.
How are you getting inspired or learning how to do those things? You know, like, was there other architects that you're looking at, or are you just like digging in? And like, what was that?
Yeah, there was a guy who's still there. Actually, his name's Matt Goldsberry at HDR. And he was kind of teaching me Grasshopper in that season. And so I was doing it on projects, but then if I had questions, I'd ask him about it. And then just nights and weekends, you know, putting in the time. And I do like my project work during the day. And then at night, I would devote time to like trying to do it a different way. I was like, I wonder if I could do this with Grasshopper. And so I would use projects as an opportunity to do that, but I'd kind of do it on my own time.
And that's just the hunger there. Yeah. I mean, that's just, and was there an idea at that point of saying like, oh, I want to make a company out of this and be a, you know, a consultant? Or was this just like, hey, I want to be better and I can be a better employee? And
yeah, at that time, you know, I've always wanted to own my own business, always, like ever since I first started. My dad actually owned a lot of rental property and owned a laundromat. Mm-hmm. And I was always kind of interested in that idea of owning a business, but I didn't know how to do it. And so, yeah, I've always wanted to do it. And I can kind of talk about that transition when that started to happen when you want. But yeah, always.
Yeah. So what was that like? When did you start deciding enough of the daytime work and just wanting to do the nighttime work during the day?
Yeah. So I was actually a BIM manager at Oz Architecture in Denver. Mm. And so I was working there as their BIM manager. And it was at that point that HDR was kind of trying to court me and date me to come back. Hmm. And I was thinking about this other opportunity of starting my business. And I remember talking to my wife and my dad, and they were both like, you know, well, business doesn't work. You know, you could either go back to HDR or maybe Oz will take you back. And so
there's some washing machines that need to be carried up some steps.
Yeah, that's right. Definitely not doing that. Definitely not doing that. So
there's no script for that.
No, definitely not. Yeah, that's all brute force there. So unless you get into some of the robotic stuff, I guess that's a thing that Elon Musk is trying to do. But anyways, so I talked to Oz and basically said, hey, I want to start my own business. I'll be happy to contract with you guys and consult until you find a new BIM manager. They agreed to that. And so I ended up doing that. And that was kind of my runway. You know, I could kind of consult with my employer. And then while I started to try to pick up clients, and my first real big client was DTJ Design in Boulder outside of Oz. And that was kind of how everything started.
I guess we did skip a little bit there. So what made you move away from HDR and Omaha?
Yeah, it just felt like a calling to come to Colorado. My wife and I came out there 2013 during all the flooding. I don't know if you remember that or if you were there for it.
I wasn't here yet, no.
Okay, yeah. So they had all these massive floods. So we commuted from Omaha there during that time period, but just kind of felt like we're supposed to come. And it's kind of coming over the 36 when you're going from Denver to Boulder and you come in to the Boulder downtown area, and just felt like it felt more like home, you know, than Omaha did, and felt like we're supposed to be there. So, yeah.
And then Oz, that was just looking at it for a different opportunity.
Yeah. So I was trying to get it to be like a real BIM manager, you know, at like a big firm. I actually interviewed at Boulder Associates, but they weren't hiring. I actually ended up getting a gig at Lance Bozio Architects as their BIM manager first, but I was commuting from Boulder all the way to South Denver. And that got old real quick. And so then I was like, man, I need to get further north. And so I had a connection. I don't know if you know Rebecca Greek. She's an architect at ShopWorks now. But she was working at Oz. And she told me, hey, we're hiring for a BIM manager, and put in a word for me. I interviewed and ended up getting the job at Oz.
What was that like? Were you the BIM manager for Oz? How many managers? Yeah. I mean,
yeah,
and how many people at the time were there? There was 150 probably, or?
Yeah, something like that. I think they had like 115, you know, 120, something like that. They had a Boulder office and a Denver office. Yeah.
So what's the life of a BIM manager of an office of 150 people like?
It's actually my favorite job I've ever had, except for what I'm doing now. Yeah, so I loved working at Oz. I loved the culture there. The people were awesome. There was Nerf gun wars. You know, they do happy hours. Like they really do a good job creating a really cool culture, I feel like. So I really liked working there from that aspect. I really like the BIM management gig because you're not on projects, you know, so you don't get the pressure of like deadlines and working crazy hours. And so it's a much chiller pace. And then you get some freedom. Like I like to talk and teach. So I would teach the staff how to use, you know, the tools and implement new technologies and do trainings. And then also, you know, you get to be kind of that superhero for them in a sense, because, you know, they're my Revit's broken or I can't get this thing done on my project, and you get to be that support arm for them. So that was always really fulfilling to me personally, to be able to help people and help them on their projects. I really enjoyed that a lot.
Yeah, it seems like such a luxurious thing. I've never been at a firm with a BIM manager, you know, and it's kind of like whoever knows the most, like everyone's like, yeah, go talk to him, right? And you're like, I've got stuff to do. What, like, you know, get out of here. or whatever. But yeah, the idea of being able to have the time and the space to grow, right? I mean, I guess, yeah, you're able to grow your own skills and your own knowledge while teaching and helping other people. And I guess it's like most people that work there should be pretty Revit literate. And it's not like you're starting from scratch or something or putting out a ton of fires. But
right.
And so then that idea of, okay, I've done that for one firm. Let's do it for a lot of firms.
Yeah.
Start the business. Yeah. You talked a little bit about this sort of, for any of us, this kind of scary moment of starting a firm, but having that runway and then that first client. How'd you get that first client?
Yeah. I actually was getting drinks with some friends, and one of them was like, hey, Bill, there's this guy named Dave who owns this firm in Boulder. You guys should chat. And we were all there having beers, and I was chatting with Dave, and he was one of the owners there. And he said, yeah, we're thinking about implementing this Revit stuff. I don't know if it's a fad or what, but, you know, maybe you can come in and talk to us about it.
Revit.
And I was like, oh, yeah. And I was like, dude, at that time I'd been using Revit for like 10 years. And I was like, oh, yeah, like I'll come in here. And I'm like, I know how to use Revit. I'll help you guys out. And I got into the meeting, and they're like, yeah, we want to use Revit. Here's the kind of projects we work on. And they were all theme park attraction like projects. So they're like, you know, we want to model a mountain in Revit. Like, how do you do that? Like, where is there a tool
where's
that
the
you
mountain
like,
button? Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, I know it does topography. Can you do a mountain in Revit? Or we have these like ride consultants, you know, and they'd send you like water slides and stuff. And you have to think about clash detection of like coordinating, you know, people and their limbs to make sure that, you know, things don't get cut off when they're riding a roller coaster going through the mountain. And I had never done anything even remotely close to that. You know, I was working on hospitals. And so I was really intimidated. I put on a good front, like, oh yeah, I can help you guys out.
I've done so many mountains. Yeah.
Right. But inside, like, I was sweating like bullets. I was so unprepared, you know, that I could help them. And how am I going to do this? You know, but yeah, that was kind of my first experience trying to help.
How were they doing that before Revit? What were they doing?
AutoCAD and SketchUp.
Really?
Yeah. And they have some really, you know, they have some really talented artists, you know, so they would sketch it out. And then a lot of times they just scan that and then put it on the drawings, you know, like physically hand draw. And because you're, how do you model a snake? You know, like, I don't know, like, let's just draw a picture of it and let the contractor figure it out, I guess, you know? And so, yeah, that's how they did it, you know, hand drawings, AutoCAD and SketchUp.
Hmm.
So.
And so when was that? What year did you start?
I think 2015. Yeah, 2015.
Okay, yeah.
So coming up on 8 years.
Yeah, because I somehow I found out about you, I feel like pretty soon when I moved here in like 2016. And I was trying to think about it earlier today. I think I reached out to you. I think maybe we needed a template at 359, a Revit template or something.
Yep.
And then you're like, yeah, I can do that. And hey, it looks like you got some extra desk. Can I rent a desk? And like, you guys were in the office with us for a little bit.
And I remember that.
That was pretty sweet. So after that first client, I mean, did it, and it seemed like you had that at that point in 2016, it seemed like you had like 4 or 5 employees. I don't know. I mean, did it start growing pretty quickly?
Yeah, we had, I think at that time, maybe 2 employees, 3 employees, and we're still a small team. So there's 7 of us total.
Mm.
And so, yeah, that's when we started. And yeah.
And so it was kind of just that sort of word of mouth caring about the services you could provide.
Yep. Word of mouth, speaking at conferences. I did a talk in 2016 called The Future of BIM is Not BIM, and it's coming faster than you think. And so like right now, like it really took off. Like if you go to YouTube and AU, right now it's the most popular, you know, video, which I was really grateful for. And so from that, we got a lot of work. And then we made a pivot to starting to work on tools, you know, for architects. Mm-hmm. So we've built out this tool that does interoperability with SketchUp and Revit. And that was kind of our pivot there. But yeah, most of it was that and, you know, just going to meetups. I'd go to like the meetups in the Front Range, Rhombus and all of those things. And we talk to people and have chats, you know, and just learn about what they're doing and then speak at conferences.
Yeah. So what was the message of the future of BIM is not BIM and it's coming faster? Watch out. You like holding up a big sign on a street corner, like shaking.
Yeah. Yeah, it was really me getting on my soapbox and it was a time for me to vent a little bit. Like, we're doing it wrong. We're using Revit like a glorified drafting tool. And so we needed to start leveraging the information. And the punchline of all of it was building information optimization. Like, that's where we're going. It's not going to be just building information model, but there's data here. So how do you start to do data-driven design and building information optimization and use the data in there to drive, you know, daylighting optimization and travel distances and departmental adjacencies and all this information, you know, that we try to do without the tool. And it's like, man, if we leverage it, you know, for that, then it could be really, really powerful. So using, you know, the data in there to help inform design.
It is funny, like just a little aside, we were working with this other architect. I don't think he listens to the podcast, but we did this like very schematic design, like rendering, like to go off and get fundraising, right? And now all of a sudden, of course, they're like, well, how much is this going to cost? Like, oh, we're going to need to get pricing and stuff. And he's like, you guys use BIM? And we're like, well, we model in Revit. Yeah. And he's like, okay. And he came back like 2 days later and he's like, yeah, can you export that BIM for me so I can send it to the contractors to get the bathrooms priced out? And I was like, we haven't modeled the bathrooms. We haven't designed anything. Like, you still have to draw everything. And he's like, oh, I got that really wrong. I need to talk with the clients here. You know, but right. There is that misconception, right, of what BIM is and the sort of like promise of it in the beginning. And then, yeah, we're kind of stuck with how we've been using it. And so in your talk, you're saying, okay, it's about optimizing this information. Did you have a, and here's my product, or it was just like, come hire us and we can help pull that information out for you. What was the sort of offering?
Yeah, I mean, I had a few examples of how we're doing it, but I was really inspired by a lot of other firms and other companies that were doing some pretty amazing things. So I actually highlighted like 10 other firms of like, so I didn't want it to be like, hey, this is just, you know, a pitch to you guys. And I didn't want it to be just my perspective. I wanted it to be like, hey, there's other people. So I validated it, you know, like it's already here. Here's people that are using robots, you know, in construction. Here's someone that's already using data and having this sweet, you know, adjacency, departmental adjacency, gravitational algorithm that would go ahead and combine these and optimize them for you. And so I tried to highlight like other people that were doing cool stuff and advanced stuff and saying, hey, it's already here. And that was my comment of why it's, you know, faster than you think because it's already happening.
And then, yeah, that shift to tools, I mean, is super interesting. And I'm still surprised that you guys are only 7 people because it seems like you're like producing some really crazy tools and getting them out there. And yeah, so the first one was, what's it called? Helix, right?
Yep.
So that was converting SketchUp to Revit.
Yep.
And back and forth or?
Yep, you go SketchUp to Revit, Revit to SketchUp, and then we also added AutoCAD to Revit and Revit to Rhino. So it's supposed to be kind of a bespoke for all these different model authoring apps and being able to push, you know, the models and the data back and forth between the two. And the AutoCAD to Revit one especially is interesting because you could use it for like as-builts. So if you have like, you know, a set of house plans from like 1986 and you want to be able to bring it in there, send it through Helix, DWG to Revit, and then it will, you know, create the BIM for you.
Like it's drawing walls and things? I mean,
it can't. Yeah, so it doesn't know, obviously, like the Z-axis, right? Because the drawings just are in 2D. But you could give it the walls. We have this option to set parameters. So you can set parameter for window heights, set parameter for wall heights, et cetera, and it'll draw them. Maybe not a super high ROI for like a house, but if you have like a central utility plant or, you know, some other bigger project with all of that information, then it could draw all the walls for you.
And so again, that was just you, just that thirst for figuring things out and bettering yourself with technology over and over. Like, I mean, obviously there's a huge demand for that, right? Like we've all been in firms where they're doing SketchUp models and at a certain point they switch over to Revit and it's like, this is the biggest waste of time ever. But
yeah,
so you saw that and did you know how to make that tool or it was about bringing on people that could do that?
Yeah, I just hired people way smarter than me. I don't know how to build the tools. I created like proof of concepts with visual programming like Dynamo and those kinds of things, but I couldn't build like a legitimate app. So I would hire like a computer scientist, you know, to come in and, you know, build it. And, you know, what it is, Adam, it's like some people will look at a problem and they go, well, that sucks, you know, and business as usual, where I try to look at a problem. And I'm like, well, there's this issue here. I wonder if you could create a solution for it. And so we created a little proof of concept. I'm like, oh, wow, you can actually do this, you know? And so I call it the model drop chasm between these different tools. You know, you try to go from one tool to the next, you have this chasm and you got to redraw everything. Well, we wanted to see if you could actually, you know, take information from one model, translate it to another, and turns out you can. So yeah, we try to create a solution out of a problem versus just leaving it linger, you know?
Hey, this episode is brought to you in part by Signature Doors and Windows and Modern Denver Magazine. Now on to the show.
I've always been interested in you. Like I gravitated towards you from the beginning. Like and I didn't even know that you didn't go to architecture school until today. But this idea that you bridge the gap really well, right? And then this idea of, I know what I want, I'm doing what I want, and I'm cutting off the fat. You know, like if you went to architecture school, that's another three years of like fat that you didn't need.
Right.
You got right to where you wanted. And then you got into the firm and you're like, I don't need to do these other things. This is what I want. But you see the problems that our profession has and the holes that we have. But then you're able to bridge that in an interesting way. So then, let's see. So Helix was first, and what else? What were some of the next ones?
Yeah, the next one we started working on was Glyph. So this is back to my HDR days. I noticed that on every single project, I would do the same task over and over again. You know, so I would work on a hospital. Here's a new hospital floor plan. Let's get to work dimensioning. Okay, dimensioning. Finish face of stud.
2 weeks.
Tab, tab.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. 2 weeks. Let's dimension all these walls. Tab, tab, tab. There's the stud. Nope, I missed it. Tab, tab. Select. Got it. You know, we create sections of all of our stairs. We elevate all of our curtain walls. We tag all of our curtain wall panels. We dimension all of our curtain wall mullions. Create the sheets. We place the views on the sheets. And we print. And we do the whole process all over again. And so I was like, gosh, this seems like, even though each footprint is different and each project is different, we document the same stuff. And so I noticed this pattern. And so we developed this tool called Glyph that does auto documentation. So you could run it. It creates all your views for you. You can do views by scope box, views by rooms, views by category. Mm. And so you could say, give me all my enlarged plans and elevations for all my bathrooms and kitchens, you know, run. And it'll create them all for you. Okay, tag all of them, dimension all of them. Okay, it'll do that. Create the sheets for them. Okay, it'll do that. Place the views on the sheets. It'll do that. And then we were like, I wonder if we could even fast track it even more. So we created a bundle. So then you could daisy chain all these tasks together. So you could run like my document curtain wall bundle, and it will create an elevation of your curtain wall, tag all your curtain wall mullions, dimension all your curtain walls, create the sheets, and place the views on the sheets as one bundle. And so that was the second one that we started to develop.
That's so crazy. It would save so much time, right? And I was checking it out today, and why have I never downloaded this or heard of it, right? I mean, these things are filling major gaps that architects need. Have you seen a large scale implementation of this by firms? I mean, are a lot of firms using it?
Yeah, we just started getting the word out. So I think we launched December of last year.
Oh, okay.
And
the way you were talking about it, I thought it had been around for years. And I was like, what? How is this not? Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah. No. So we just launched it last year. We had some, like, I built some Dynamo scripts that did different things like this, but then we wanted to, you know, before last year, but last year was when it officially became like a legitimate standalone app inside of Revit.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, we do have different people that are using it, enterprise customers, you know, people that have bought for the whole company, people that have just bought a few seats of it. So, yeah.
And then what was next? So I guess, so it's only been what, 5 months essentially that you started rolled out your second one, and now you have five.
Yeah.
And so it was, really picking up.
Yeah. So, and we dual threading some of these. So some of them are working on simultaneously. Another one is Morphous, and we announced that one last year, actually at AU. And that one is in closed beta right now. Basically, it's a co-authoring generative design tool inside of Revit. So there's been a bunch of architects actually that have written some very not so flattering comments about generative design.
Mm-hmm.
So like Daniel Davis being one of them, he did a very popular article called Generative Design is Doomed to Fail.
Mm.
And so, which I agree with him in theory, I gave a bunch of counterpoints of why it's not. Part of the problem with generative design is that you have to be a computational guru. You have to know Dynamo, you got to know Grasshopper to do all these things. No one's writing their own algorithms and all of that stuff. And the other problem is a lot of these tools live outside your main software, Revit, AutoCAD, whatever. So built out Morphous, which we coin as a co-authoring tool. So you draw the walls and it basically does all the infill for you. Lays out all your offices, and then you can bake it as furniture. And it's a co-authoring tool, you know, the melding of, you know, professional and the computer together. And it's intended to be as intuitive as just drawing a wall in Revit. And so our whole pitch was like, do you have to throw the generative design baby out with the bathwater, or can you do like co-authoring and pair it together? So that's the other one that we've been working on.
Because that, I mean, looking at what it can do, right? Like you're seeing the example is like a office floor plate, right? And
yep.
And you're talking about, okay, I want a single loaded corridor or something with offices on the outside, and you're moving the shape, and everybody should go check this out because it is really impressive and able to kind of, again, just toggle those parameters, right? And you're just able to explore a lot faster. So what was his argument against that in what he was talking about?
Basically, architects don't work this way. And the main criticism was what Autodesk and others have been like pitching as generative design, and no shade on them, but there's been like a lot of like, man, this isn't the way architects work. This isn't the way we design. And so you had to be like a their answer is you have to use Dynamo, you have to publish this Dynamo script, and then you do what they call optioneering, and you got to pick a different slider, move it up or down or whatever. You tell me, Adam, but I'm guessing, like, as an architect, you don't really want to deal with a bunch of scripts every time you want to do a design. You don't want to then publish it somewhere to optioneer it. Like, you want it to be intuitive, like you're drawing just like you would on a board or in Revit or AutoCAD. You want to do it like a drawing tool. And so that was his angle of why it was doomed to fail, is that you have to, the main thing was like, you have to write your algorithm and all that. And architects don't want to do that. They want to draw.
So it wasn't necessarily the generative design part. It was just that his critique was the tools were too clunky at that time, because then we get into Verus, right? Which is this whole other hot topic coming up. So tell us about Verus.
Oh man, dude. Okay, so Verus is an AI ideation tool for architects and contractors. So I can't tell you like how excited I am about this. It's so cool. If anybody, obviously AI is blowing up right now. Like, you get ChatGPT, you get Midjourney, you get all these crazy awesome AI tools that are happening and directly applicable for architects. And so Verus, the problem with a lot of these tools, again, notice a theme, like problem solution, right? The problem with a lot of the AI tools that are available, i.e. Midjourney, if I go to Midjourney right now, and for those that don't know, Midjourney is a text to image AI tool. So you type in, I want, you know, a 47 story hospital. I want, you know, this kind of, I want a wood facade. I want set in suburban background, you know, whatever you want. And it will develop an image for you. And it does images for other stuff that's not architecture related. But it's very popular right now in architecture and people are, you know, using it. The problem with it is that it's not your project. It doesn't have your address where you're at. It doesn't have your setbacks. It doesn't have your space program. It doesn't have any of that. And so it'll give you an image, but it's very, you know, not applicable to your site, your location. And so what we did is we developed a tool that uses your model as a substrate. So it uses your Revit model or your SketchUp model or your Rhino model as a substrate. And then you type in, I want, you know, ACM panels, black finishes. I want curtain wall. I want curvy balconies. And it'll use your model as a substrate and it will superimpose those descriptions, those characteristics on top of your model for you. And it's intended, it's an ideation tool first. It'll create an image for you. The end result is an image. It's not a rendering tool first, though we're working on that piece of it to make it a stronger rendering tool, but it creates an image for you. And it's this way similar to how you go to Pinterest or Google or other things to try to get inspired for your project. Think about taking Pinterest and applying it to your model. That's what it does. It'll take those kinds of characteristics, you know, steel, aluminum, wood, whatever, white, you know, white finishes, black finishes, blue finishes, whatever, and it'll apply it to your model and come up with different design, help you to come up with different design concepts.
Yeah. And then there's a creativity slider, right? And and a sort of, and a different how many iterations and like all these other things of, it's really crazy. Checking it out. If you got that sort of response from Morphous, what sort of feedback have you been getting from architects here? I mean, it's dividing. I mean, it's super divisive, right? This idea of AI, I think, within the profession. So what's been coming from that?
Yeah, definitely. It's a very, you are right. I think divisive is a good word for it. People are on either side of this fence. And I saw a post, you know, people are like, oh, it's going to put us out of a job. I don't think so. I think I gravitate to the post of someone that's been it's a very popular one about AI that says AI is not going to put you out of a job. Someone using AI will. And so, you know, AI isn't running itself. You still, as an architect, have to put in Verus. You still have to have a model, for goodness sake, as a substrate. You know, like, it's not going to create it just out of nothing. And so you use your model, you know, as the substrate, and then it's a tool, just like Enscape's a tool, just like Revit's a tool, just anything else, Twinmotion, if you're doing renderings, it's a tool in your tool belt to help you do your job and do it faster.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's really interesting. I've been having conversations with, like you were talking about back at HDR, of like, it's easy to stay in your silo, right? Where sometimes you'll talk to an architect and they've never even heard of Midjourney, or like, or you're talking to people and yeah, it's saying it's going to put us out of a job, or it's this big detriment to the profession where we're about these thoughtful moves and thoughtful concepts, and all of a sudden you can get 50 concepts at once generated quickly, you know, and the client chooses one and okay, go, right? It's not a, right now it's not an okay, go, right? Like it's still, there's still an architectural process there. But I do like that idea of it's a tool, right? And it's a co-authoring. That yeah. Term is nice, of the sort of co-authoring. And there's moments where I can be laying in bed and I get really, really fearful of it and what's going to happen. And then I have to say, well, just, you need to get better at it. And that's how, need to be the person doing it, right? And it's like, you can run away from technology, but it's not going to go away, right? I think I haven't taught the last two or three semesters, but I hear that it's you know, creating a dilemma, Midjourney specifically, creating a dilemma in studio of people now doing these, their designs super fast and thinking they're done, you know, or whatever, or having a hard time distinguish. Yeah, when I saw you guys, it was like, to me, it was like all of a sudden AI is just here, right? Like it's like all these things have been just piling up real fast. There's Midjourney, and then it was like, what? Even Bill has an AI program now. Like, what is this? But I mean, is this something you guys saw a few years ago and developed, or is this a pretty quick project for you?
Yeah. So shout out to my business partner, Ben. He actually is the brains behind it, developed it. And so he started working on it late last year. And then we launched it at the beginning of this year. And part of it is really the barrier to entry to a lot of this stuff was very difficult. You had to do machine learning. You had to have a big server, do all this. And so what's happened is a lot of people now have done a lot of that work, and you can now use those machine learned models to help with your design, like to borrow from it to build an app if you want, you know, like you don't have to build ChatGPT. You can build an app on top of ChatGPT as an example. You know what I mean? And so we were able to leverage that. And you are right. Like it's come really fast. And even for myself, a lot of this 6 months ago felt very like academic. I'm like, I don't know, like where's the application? Like where's the rubber hit the road? And then now I feel like I'm in whiplash, like where everything is getting disrupted. You know, people are building all these AI businesses. And to quote someone else, like whether we like it or not, like cat's out of the bag, like it's here, you know, like you can like it, you can not like it, you can shake your fist at it. It's not going away. Like
he doesn't care if you like it or not. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. It's like the internet. Like you could say, oh, the internet, it's so horrible. It does all these, you know, horrible things. Well, there's a lot of good things too. And it's not going away. You know, like the internet's here. As much as you could shake your fist at the internet, it's not going away. Same is true for AI. It's out. It's here. So all of us, you know, have to buckle up, live with it, whether we like it or not, you know, unfortunately, fortunately, whatever side you land on this. So, yep.
Yeah. Then that's one business, right?
Yeah.
kind of quickly, like, yeah, so you have your other business that we've used one or two times, your scanning company. Yeah. Talk about that.
Yeah. So we started OnPoint Scans in 2018, and that was just a idea of like trying to diversify a little bit, not have all of our eggs in the Evolve Lab basket. And it was a really cool opportunity. Like, again, a lot of this, what we do is stuff that I just personally geek out about and like, and I think it adds value to other people. And so we do LiDAR scanning, photogrammetry scanning. So like you said, Adam, you've used this before, and you have a project and you have some existing project you're doing a renovation. We come out, we scan the interior, the exterior, and then provide either a point cloud or a Revit model is what we'll do as a service.
Yeah, that was so nice. This complicated house, and we hired Bill and he scanned it and modeled it, and there it was.
It was a fun one. It was a cool house.
Yeah. So how is that? Are you still happy that you've created that business? I think like you emailed me at like 1 a.m. and we're modeling this little house in Revit, I think, for me. And I was like, yeah, this guy has too many companies and too much going on. But and there too, right? It's a more and more disrupted industry, right? With iPhone apps and things and scanning. And I mean, I think you guys have this big, awesome scanner, right? But it's getting smaller and smaller and cheaper and cheaper. What are you seeing on that front?
Yeah, definitely. I think it's getting easier to do it yourself. A lot of the you can do it with a phone, you can do it with an iPad. You don't get the tolerances, you know, like the tolerances are more inaccurate with some of those tools and technologies. So that's where the LiDAR is still really good. Regarding your comment of me emailing you at 1 o'clock in the morning and working out, you know, starting your own business, something I didn't, and I'm still trying to figure this out, honestly, is like now all of my team get to work on all the fun stuff. Mm. And like, I'm like admin and like contracts and NDAs and, you know, all of that. And, you know, proving payroll and all of those kinds of things. And so much of my life now is business administration and business management, that when you sent me that project, like I had this itch that I wanted to scratch. And similar to my HDR days, is like, well, nights and weekends, like that's when I'm going to work on the fun stuff. You know what I mean? And so that's why I was working on that, and why I was working on it so late, because like selfishly, it sounds weird, but selfish, like I like that stuff. So it's not so much work to me. You know what I mean? Like it's the fun part. Like, I don't know, that part never's gone away. So like, I really enjoyed it. And that's why I was working on it, you know, in the evening hours outside of office hours, running Evolve Lab and other things, because I like it. It was fun. So
that's good that that's the fun stuff for you. I misread that. So that's good.
Yeah.
I mean, I get that with a lot of, especially like older principals that come on the podcast, and right, like you, the further and further on you are, you turn into more and more of an administrative role.
Yeah.
And they're, you know, working on how to kind of shed that and get back to what you want. You know, it seems like you have this nice, nimble team where, like you're saying, you're hiring smarter people who are smarter in these specific things and letting them run down these avenues. Why haven't you just hired a good admin to cover all that? You know, like, is that possible? Or
yeah, it's a good question. I have had certain people that have helped me like on the business development side in the past, like a sales role, and that takes up a lot of my time. The admin stuff, I guess, is like, I don't know, like 20% of my time. So it's like, gosh, it's not a full-time role, but you could like contract or delegate it to someone. And I probably should. To be honest, a big part of what we've been doing is investing in our product. So we're bootstrapped 100%. You know, we didn't get investors like you do with a lot of these companies. You know, you go out and say, get investors. And so our services have fed our products. And now that the products are starting, you know, so we basically, all of our revenue goes over there and we reinvest in ourselves into those products. And so we typically don't have any extra money left over to hire someone for this role. So then it just becomes me doing it, you know? The thing now is like, now that some of these products are taken off, now the goal is, okay, let's start to scale this thing that actually works, because we get revenue, you know, from those things, from the products and the services, and have the funds to be able to hire those kinds of people.
Hey, we're happy to be sponsored by Modern in Denver Magazine. For over a decade, they've been crafting fantastically curated content on Colorado designers and projects, spreading the gospel of good design within our region.
And I love how the goal of Modern in Denver aligns with the goal of this podcast: to better build up and connect the community of Colorado designers. So go buy a copy of the magazine at your local bookstand, subscribe to their weekly email list, and follow them on Instagram.
Check it out.
Yeah. Well, and again, you know, it's like we have a certain skill set and educational background, and then you're getting further and further into this more and more business things. I mean, was that, I guess two questions here, maybe, like, what was that a pretty conscious idea of, okay, yeah, we're not going to go out and get investment because of this, this, and this? And like the second question of, what would be your advice for somebody, an architect trying to start a technology company or doing something else like that? You know, are you happy you went that way?
Yeah, good question. I always heard the analogy, you know, if you go out and get outside funding, it's like hitchhiking. You know, they'll put gas in your tank as long as you take them where they want to go. As soon as you don't, they kick you out of your van and they take your car, you know? And so the point of that is like, you don't have control a lot of times. You're also relinquishing parts of your business. But I think as I've matured and grown like more knowledgeable of this, like, cause I was pretty ignorant, you know, I didn't go to school to get my MBA. Like, I'm going to get my MBA through hard knock and trial and error and making mistakes and bumping into walls and breaking stuff. And that didn't work. Let's try this. And so like, you know, a big part of it is just trial and error. But I would say like, that's one of the reasons we didn't do it. I'm still debating like if that was the right answer or not. You know, I think, yeah, you relinquish 10% of your business, 20% of your business, you get some capital, and then you can really, you know, do it and grow it. I think it's just it, but I've heard horror stories. I have a really good friend in the Front Range, owns a lighting design and distribution company, tried to do a software startup. Horror stories, you know, of like the investor was horrible, partners were horrible, how to get out of it. You know, a big part of it is like making sure whoever you're working with, you like them. That's the, I'd say the biggest thing. My business partner, Ben, I like him a lot. He's an incredible human being. And he brings a skill set that I don't. He does the app dev stuff. And so that's would be the advice that I would say, investor or not, you know, make sure whoever your partners are that you like them and that you guys get along really, really well. And you set up good, you know, who's doing what, et cetera.
Yeah.
You ever I think maybe answers your second part of your question too, I think maybe.
Do you ever wish you went and got an MBA? I think about that sometimes. No.
I think there's value in it, but it's like a lot of this stuff, especially with the advent of the internet and YouTube, my goodness, you can learn anything, you know, like knowledge is free. You can get a lot of that information online nowadays. So
yeah, I have this insecurity, you know, I'm like, I don't know what I'm doing with business. There's people who know so much better. And I don't know. And I was like talking to two of my business friends, like, I'm thinking maybe about, you know, I just got way too much free time. Maybe I should go get an MBA. And they're like, no, you know, everything you need to know, just keep going and like get some advice from people. And, but it, yeah, it's so easy, right? To feed into or buy into that insecurity of, I don't know what I'm doing, or I can't do this, or, you know, it's always inspiring watching you continue to do more things and push things further. And yeah.
Yeah. Thanks, Adam. You too, man.
Let's see real fast. So, well, maybe not real fast, but speaking of pushing things forward, what's the next thing on the horizon? Like what's getting you excited in terms of technology and especially in how it relates with architecture?
AI, man. It's crazy. Like to go back, like it's pretty new technology. I know we already touched on that topic, but like it's just getting started. It feels like kind of like when we first started using Revit, you know, or as soon as like the internet started coming out. I think it's just coming. And so I'm very, very fascinated, and I didn't realize the power of it. I've been just consuming a ton of information on that. And people are using AI for all kinds of things, you know, whether it's helping with what we're doing, like AI ideation or floor plan generation or renderings, but even like not in our industry, right? Like I saw you can actually now hire like AI agency for modeling. And you could say, hey, I want, you know, a male 6'4", brown hair, you know, wearing my t-shirt, you know, and you can hire an AI model. You know, who would have thought, you know what I mean? So like some of this is very fascinating to me to think of, like, gosh, this is crazy, you know, that it's here and what it's doing to the marketplace, to the industry, to our industry. So that's where I'm probably most excited. I know some people are hesitant about it and nervous, and we're always nervous about things that we don't know or understand. But for me, it's a really exciting time, an exciting time to be alive.
Yeah. I mean, I think about somebody, or even like when we were in high school, right? Of getting into AutoCAD and being like, this is amazing. Like you don't have to draw anything anymore. It's doing line weights. You know, it's like, how can this get any better? Like this can't get any better of designing. And then all of a sudden it's, oh no, you could build a whole 3D model of this project and do it, you know? And it's like, and that's kind of how I feel about AI right now of okay, yeah, this thing is like coming up with better ideas maybe than I could come up with. And it's applying materials and it's doing these renderings a lot faster, but like, there's no way it can do anything else. You know, it's like, I can't imagine the possibilities beyond that. And this is like in the first year or whatever, 2 years of AI and architecture in my simplified way of thinking, you know? So it's like, tell me what the model version of AutoCAD for AI is. Peer into the future further for me.
Yeah. Yeah. I think AI gives you superpowers to
your point.
Or should
I just ask AI? And yeah,
just ask AI. Yeah. Just ask ChatGPT. Yeah. Like, how long is this going to be going?
How much longer will I have a job?
Yeah. That's funny. Yeah. Yeah. Back to that quote, man. I think AI won't put you out of job. I think people that use AI will. And I think if you can use it as an architect and you could really leverage it, it gives you superpowers. Like I do a lot of demos of Verus now, And I did this post like 2 weeks ago on LinkedIn or something. And I was surprised. Like I did a 20-minute demo and I created probably 50 design options, different materials, different settings. I can say it's in Miami. I can say it's in Alaska. I can say it's this kind of material, this kind of backdrop. I want it in winter. I want it in spring. Give me more glass. Give me less glass. Give me more brick. Give me less brick. And in 20 minutes, I cranked out all those options. There's 0%. Like that would have taken me like each option easily a week in Revit, and then post-production rendering and all of that. They're on another few days, if not a week, you know, right. 2 weeks per option. Easy, you know, easy. Where in 20 minutes, like I was able to crank out all of those. And so, but it's an art. It really is. Like people think it's just, it's not. Like there's a whole art to it. There's a term called prompt engineering. So like you have to prompt the words right. You have to think about what you're trying to accomplish, what the limitations of the app are, just like in Revit. Like you can't just model anything in Revit. You got to think about what the limitations are of the program. And you got to think, work within those guardrails, those constraints, right? But it gives you superpowers, in my opinion, and it's going to give architects superpowers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think about the stories of when CAD started coming about, right? Like I need to check this stat. Don't hold me to this, but it was something like 2/3 of draftsmen and architects at the time lost their jobs or something. Like firms could get so much more efficient because of that. But somehow the profession got through that, right? And there's still enough work. And now we're just documenting things 100 times more than they were back then. You know, like our drawing sets are just exponentially larger and ideally it's leading to better quality and better performance. And so yeah, for everybody, you can be scared, but it doesn't care.
It doesn't care.
It does
not care. It doesn't care. The market doesn't care. It's here whether you like it or not. And so I'd encourage people, just like, you know, when AutoCAD, you know, was here and then this new thing called Revit came out and you're like, what the heck is this thing? You know, people started to get into it. I encourage people, check it out and try using it. Don't be scared of it. It's here.
Yeah. Evolvelab.com.
Evolvelab.io. Yeah.
.io. Check it out.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. Well, like I said, I've always been just impressed by you and energized by you when I'm around you. And it was great when you were in the office and great whenever we can get a client to pay for a good scan of their house. But it's been fun watching you from a little bit from afar and developing these apps and plugins and programs. And yeah, I'm excited to see what else you're doing. So thanks for coming on.
Yeah, appreciate it, Adam. Thanks so much.
You can visit architecting.com, that's architect-ing.com, to see images from this week's guest.
And please rate and review the show wherever you listen to podcasts.
Have a great week and keep connecting.
Hi, I'm Eli. This show is made by my mom and dad and these people.
Heidi Mendoza. Emily Child.
Fernando Queiroz.
Zach Huff.
Trevor Motzko.
Aaron Best.
Kyle Brunner.
Rob Cleary. All right, let's get a coffee. See ya.
This is Sarah Hubbard, host of You and Me Kid, a podcast about starting and raising a family on your own. We just launched season 2, and I'm speaking with single moms, those still considering, and experts in relevant fields to give you a real sense of what the day-to-day experience of solo parenting looks and feels like. Plus, this season, I've partnered with California Cryobank, the #1 sperm bank in the U.S. So wherever you are in the process, this podcast provides some support, humor, and helpful information. Listen to You and Me Kid wherever you get your podcasts.